What's up, everybody? This is Roman Gennaro of Empire Sports Talk. Let's jump right in to things here. The NBA Finals are underway. Game one was on Thursday. Game two is on Sunday. We're recording this on Saturday, so game two is one day away. Look, if you saw our simulation of prime duos, KG and Tatum versus Dirk and Luka, I said that I saw something that somebody in our comments on social media said Boston in five, and I have to agree. I agreed before game one, and after game one, I'm even more convinced. I was actually surprised there were so many people predicting Dallas to win, let alone Dallas in seven. There were some people saying Dallas in five, Dallas in six, and I just don't see it. And even though KG and Dirk are obviously not playing in these finals, the decisive victory by Tatum and KG in that video kind of proved the point. And look, the teams that are on the court now for the NBA Finals, the X factor here is that Boston is so much deeper than Dallas. Not to mention that Kyrie especially did not play well at all in game one. Luka played fine. He did get 30, but he didn't shoot that particularly well. I think he was 13 of 29. And Luka's plus minus was minus 10. Kyrie's was minus 19. And outside of Luka and Kyrie, I've said this before, I'll say it again, there's not much there. It's just a bunch of role players. And you're not going to beat Boston that way. They had to have a perfect run in the playoffs, in the Western Conference playoffs, to get where they were. And they did. And I think they were, I think they're suffering now what I believe Minnesota was suffering in the previous round, where Minnesota was built to beat Denver. And they used all their energy and effort and everything they had to beat Denver. So they didn't, so they were pretty, it's easy to see they were pretty gassed by the time they got to Dallas. And that's what I think is happening to Dallas now. It took everything they had to get through the Clippers, the Thunder, and Minnesota, and now they've run into Boston, who's tremendously more well-balanced than they are, and it's a problem. Dallas got outshot, out-rebounded, outpassed. Boston had better field goal percentage, three-point percentage, more fast break points, and eight more blocks. Dallas only had nine assists in game one. That's a total. Nine assists. By far their lowest total in a game all season, to Boston's 23 assists. Dallas got run over by the Beantown train, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. Because while Luka and Kyrie's combined 42 was actually better than Tatum and Brown's combined 38, as I said, Boston is much deeper. They won game one by a score of 107 to 89. Luka and Kyrie shot a combined 18 of 45. Boston won this game by nearly 20 points, and Tatum and Brown didn't play that particularly well. Tatum had 16 on 6 of 16 shooting. Brown was slightly better at 22 points, but we both know that they're both capable of doing much, much better. Obviously, Kyrie is too. Luka is almost a guaranteed 30 points, but he definitely could have shot better. Kyrie could have shot much better, but that's the thing. The depth is what's going to kill Dallas, because even though Brown and Tatum weren't that good, they still won by 18 points, and that's because Porzingis had 20 points and 3 blocks in his first game back after a long absence. Jrue Holiday had a plus minus of plus 20, and Sam Hauser had a plus minus of plus 17. And Jrue Holiday is one of these guys. He's one of these X factor guys. His defense is all-star caliber. And he's not one of these guys that's going to blow up the stat sheet, although he did have, I think, 8 rebounds and 5 assists. He's not going to blow up the stat sheet, but he is crucial to have on the court. The depth is just there. And not to mention that Tatum, who I said was 6 of 16 for 16 points, and Horford, who's 4 of 8 for 10 points, are only going to get better in this series. Yes, Horford's a little bit older, but he always seems to come up big in these moments for Dallas. And Tatum is maybe the best player on the floor, maybe the second best, depending on where you rank him and Luka. I just don't think Dallas has enough. I don't think they have enough pieces to even hang with Boston, especially now that Porzingis is back in the lineup and looking, he looked pretty good in game one. I think this series is gonna be over fast. I'm pretty comfortable with Boston in five. Huge news out of Major League Baseball. Tucapita Marcano is banned for life because of gambling. And yes, Tucapita Marcano you might be like, who? Unless you're a big baseball fan, not a big name, but it is still a lifetime ban. And this comes just a couple months after Jontay Porter was banned for life by the NBA for similar things. Four other players received a year-long suspension for things related to gambling. That's Jay Groom, Michael Kelly, Jose Rodriguez, and Andrew Salfrank were all received 1 year suspensions, and it was determined that their suspensions were not related to Marcano's lifetime ban, but they came up in the same investigation. According to Major League Baseball, none of the five players played in any game on which they placed a bet, and all denied having inside information relevant to those bets. So, four players receive 1 year bans. Tupita Marcano is out. He's played for Pittsburgh, he's played for San Diego, and now he is playing for no one. As I mentioned, the second current athlete in the four major American sports leagues to be banned for life because of gambling in the last couple of months. And look, I don't want to sit here and disparage Marcano, but with everything we've seen, Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, with Jontay Porter being banned for life, with the Pete Rose thing coming up about every 6 months in the media, you got to be kind of, I'll just say it on this podcast, you got to be kind of stupid to do this. You see everything. You're in a sport that talks about it all the time because of the all-time hit leader. You see Shohei's interpreter not understanding that it wasn't, that even though sports gambling is legal a lot of places, it wasn't legal in California. And it's definitely not legal to do it, to bet on a league that you play in. And the numbers that we got, thanks to our friends at Front Office Sports, and I'll throw the graphic up here for us, and they just paint a picture of someone that is not a very skilled gambler. Total amount bet on baseball, $150,000. Total amount bet on Major League Baseball, $87,319. So obviously he was betting on other leagues, possibly in other countries. We don't know. Average amount per bet, $378. Number of MLB bets, 231. Bets on Pirates games, 25. So let's pause there. Yes, that last number is laughable, but let's pause there. Marcano was a player for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and we have further information, thanks to our friends at Talkin' Baseball, that told us that of those 25 bets that Marcano made on the Pirates, they were all games in which he wasn't playing. He was injured during that stretch. He was betting on his team while being injured, and he lost all the bets. All of them. 0 for 25. So clearly, Marcano had a problem, and he wasn't good at it. You know, there's that old saying, it's not true, by the way, if you have a gambling problem, get help, that it's not a problem if you're good at it. Marcano wasn't good at it. MLB bets won 4.3%. Total amount bet on MLB games, we'll go back to that stat, 87,319. Marcano won 4% of the time. So not only was he kind of dumb, again, I'm not trying to belittle him. You know, there's an old saying my sister used to have when I was little. She said, "Roman, you're not stupid. You just sometimes make stupid decisions." I'm not saying Tucapita Marcano is stupid. I'm saying he made stupid decisions, given everything that surrounded his own sport at the start of the year with Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter. Given everything that happened just a couple months ago in the NBA, given all that we know about legalized sports gambling in the US and how it's not legal everywhere, and just the common sense of not betting on your own sport, and the fact that the Pete Rose conversation is still happening all the time for this exact reason, you really have to not be thinking to get banned for life. So it is what it is. I can't understand how somebody could still make a mistake like that. Tucapita Marcano will never play another inning of Major League Baseball. And it is what it is. Thing that I want to spend the rest of the time on is, no surprise if you've been paying attention, to what's been going on, Caitlin Clark. The big story over the last week, how Chicago Sky Ford, you can call it what you want, shoved or whatever, and it sparked a lot of debate. And I feel the best way that I can talk about that incident is by using football terms. Because I've heard a lot of WNBA analysts, and there are a lot of more people that can talk about the WNBA, a lot more sophisticated than I can. I am a casual when it comes to WNBA, and I was brought to it by Caitlin Clark, as were a lot of people, and that's the point of what I want to talk about. There were some that were saying, oh, this was a competitive play, you know, heat of the moment, they were guarding each other, all the sort of stuff. It's not a big deal. Carter was assessed a flagrant one for the hit on Caitlin Clark. But I don't know if in this instance you can argue a competitive play. Because to use NFL terms, Caitlin Clark was away from the play. It's what the NFL would call being a defenseless receiver. Kennedy Carter blindsided Caitlin Clark. It's not that they were locked up on defense. Both Caitlin and Kennedy Carter were away from the play. They were both. Caitlin was watching the play. She was about even with the baseline, and she was looking up, watching the play that was happening in front of her. And Kennedy Carter, who was easily three steps away, hip checked Caitlin Clark out of the blue, and Caitlin did not see it coming. That is the definition of a blindside block. Caitlin Clark was a defenseless receiver, ended up on the ground, but that sparked, regardless of what you think about, was it defenseless, was it dirty, was it competitive, whatever, that sparked another conversation because of what happened after that. First of all, the obvious thing that you saw in the moment was that none of Caitlin Clark's teammates came to help her out. There was not another member of the Indiana Fever in the picture for several seconds. And then, when asked about her shove, Kennedy Carter said, I don't regret it, and offered up, what does she, Caitlin Clark, bring to the game anyway? More on that in a second. But it opens the conversation of how the WNBA is treating Caitlin Clark as a whole. Obviously, Caitlin Clark was wildly popular in college, and wildly popular as she was being brought into the WNBA, but it seems that ever since she came into the NBA, she's been anything but welcome by players and coaches. And this incident where her teammates were nowhere to be found in interviews about the incident, are really just nowhere to be found in general anywhere near Caitlin Clark. When the Chicago Sky get interviewed post-game, you usually see one or two or three of them getting interviewed together, and sometimes their coach is right there. Very similar to the way that the Minnesota Timberwolves would conduct interviews as a team during the postseason. We say that we see that a lot with the Chicago Sky. You never see that when it comes to the Indiana Fever and Caitlin Clark. And shortly after this incident, the Chicago Sky players were getting off a bus and going into a hotel when Kennedy Carter was approached by a man who was shouting all these things at her in defense of Caitlin Clark and harassing her and all this sort of stuff. And her teammates jumped in really quick and released several statements thereafter. The coach released a statement after that saying, you can't behave like that, you can't do this, blah, 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 coming to Kennedy Carter's defense. I haven't heard anyone come to Caitlin Clark's defense at any point during the first 12 games of her rookie season. And she's been getting hit a lot. She's been getting beat up. And the only comment I've heard from her coach during all that was, well, she's got to get used to the physicality of the league. I haven't seen anybody else in the league get beat up the way that Caitlin Clark's getting beat up. Certainly not blindsided away from the play by a defender that was several feet from her at the start of the play. And it's kind of hard to argue competitive when you could see Kennedy Carter shouting at Caitlin Clark before and after she knocked her down. It's hard for me to look at all of it and not see it as, oh, WNBA as a whole is jealous of Caitlin Clark. And that may be true, that may not be true. But why I think it's ridiculous if they were, is that Caitlin Clark as I said, is wildly popular. And she was wildly popular in college. And this last year's women's tournament was the most watched tournament ever. I believe it was more watched than the men's tournament. That's the first time that's ever happened. Caitlin Clark was a major reason for that. And now she's in the WNBA, and WNBA is selling out arenas. More on that later, because Caitlin Clark is around. And I it's not ridiculous to say that there are players who are jealous that Caitlin Clark is getting all this attention when the WNBA fought for that attention and fought for equal pay and that kind of thing for so long. But here's why I think it's ridiculous, is that Caitlin Clark now shares your league. She shares your locker room, she shares your arenas now. So any popularity that she brings with her, if people come to see her, they're coming to see you. Might not be directly, but if you've been fighting for better accommodations, better equipment, better training facilities, better travel accommodations, you get those things because of revenue. And revenue comes from viewership. And viewership of the WNBA has skyrocketed since Caitlin Clark showed up. In the days following the Kennedy Carter incident, Angel Reese spoke up and said, "I want y'all to know it's not just one player bringing all the attention to the WNBA. It's because of me too, and I want you to recognize that." And she's not completely wrong, because a couple of years ago, when Angel Reese showed up on the scene, nobody was talking about Caitlin Clark. And Caitlin Clark's mythos grew, but you would say that at that same time, Angel Reese's mythos was growing faster. And LSU was the best team in women's college basketball. And they brought a swagger that we haven't seen in women's college basketball ever. And Angel Reese was the face of the team. But it wasn't until Angel Reese's national championship ring taunt that people started paying more and more attention to Caitlin Clark. And you could argue that at that moment in time, the two swapped. When women's college basketball went from being focused completely on Angel Reese to now being enamored with Caitlin Clark. And you could also make the argument that from that moment, Angel Reese's and Caitlin Clark's careers have gone kind of in opposite directions. The following season at LSU, Angel Reese was benched by head coach Kim Mulkey and missed four games because of, quote, locker room issues. Caitlin Clark went on to become the all-time women's basketball leading scorer and the all-time college basketball leading scorer that season. And then in the tournament, in the Elite Eight, Iowa and LSU met again. Obviously, the last time they met, it was the championship ring celebration by Angel Reese. But this time, Iowa beat LSU 94 to 87 to advance to the Final Four. Obviously, Iowa would go on to play in the national championship game again. But in that game against LSU, Caitlin Clark had 41 points and Angel Reese had 17. So obviously, at that point, the Caitlin Clark frenzy had reached a fever pitch and she had eclipsed Angel Reese as the face of women's college basketball. Then you fast forward literally like a week, because of how quickly things moved in the WNBA, to the WNBA draft. Caitlin Clark obviously was drafted first overall to the Indiana Fever, and has a player salary around 85.9K. Angel Reese was drafted seventh to the Chicago Sky and has a salary around 82.4K. Obviously not that far off, but here's where it gets different. Caitlin Clark then signed a $28 million deal with Nike. Angel Reese, while she was still at LSU, signed a much less lucrative deal with Reebok. Fast forward to on the court, Caitlin Clark, and you have to take this with a grain of salt because Caitlin Clark is a guard, whereas Angel Reese is a forward, but Caitlin Clark is averaging 16.8 points a game, 5.3 rebounds, 6.3 assists, and 1.5 steals. Angel Reese is averaging 11.4 points, 9.2 rebounds, 1.9 assists, and 1.6 steals. So Angel Reese's comments at this time, when the world is talking about Caitlin Clark and what Angel Reese's comments did to her, Angel Reese chose, she defended Kennedy Carter, but then she immediately started talking about herself. Like, I am also the face of the WNBA and women's college, like the surge of women's college basketball or the surge of women's basketball. And to a point, she's right. She was the face of the beginning of the surge in college basketball. But Caitlin Clark is undeniably the face of the growth in the WNBA. And this is where I think you're really seeing that jealousy of why are you not talking about us too? Because Caitlin Clark is at the front of it. But it's not a bad thing. Like I'm saying, the perks that the WNBA has been asking for years comes from revenue, and revenue comes from viewership. And Caitlin Clark is bringing that viewership. And you could argue too, also, that there is that this was a pretty good draft class as far as talent, and that the second overall pick, Cameron Brink, is garnering more attention than Angel Reese is. You can take that however you want to take that, but you could argue that Cameron Brink has become the second most popular WNBA player behind Caitlin Clark. We've barely heard anybody say anything about Caitlin Clark that was positive, other than, oh, she can shoot. And including Diana Taurasi, who I believe in the same interview like praised her but also criticized her. Like, and that's the GOAT of the WNBA, like the all-time leading scorer. So it doesn't seem like there's any love lost for Caitlin Clark in the WNBA, and she hasn't done anything. It feels like it's just a targeted attack on someone new. Because she's bigger and more, she's bringing more notoriety to the league than anything the league has seen, and every other player in the league is just jealous. I can't speak super detailed to that because I'm one of the ones that's like, oh, who's this really awesome player? Let me check it out. I'll admit that I'm a casual. I don't know that much about the WNBA, but I listen to this stuff every day, and I listen to what ESPN says about her, and I listen to what the WNBA and analysts say about her, and I listen to all these interviews, and it seems clear to me that she's bringing in all this attention, and it's a jealousy movement. And that brings me back to what one of Kennedy Carter's comments following the incident. She said, "What does she bring to the game anyway? She brings fans, first of all, which is something the WNBA really needs. Nobody was showing up before. The NBA was basically bailing you out financially because you were a failing corporation. And obviously, WNBA flights are now chartered, and you can't put that credit on Caitlin Clark because that was going to happen before she was drafted. But viewership has gone up. It's the WNBA is being talked about on major sports networks like it never was before. It's being broadcast. I think all of Caitlin Clark's games are being nationally broadcast. That never happened. And so to Kennedy Clark's comments, it's like, what does she bring to the game? Well, fans, viewership, which in turn is revenue, which in turn pays your salaries, pays for the accommodations that you want, pays for the transportation, like all the things that you guys have been asking for years. This attention is starting to get you. It's like, what does she bring to the game? Okay, let's talk about the game. She's the first player in WNBA history with 200 points and 75 assists through her first 12 career games. And the average attendance at WNBA games featuring Caitlin Clark last weekend was 17,337. The average attendance at all other NBA games last weekend, 7,008. So Caitlin Clark's mere presence draws in more than double the amount of fans as any other WNBA game. Could we spread the love a little? Sure. But you're going to see Caitlin Clark. Fans are going to come to your arena to see Caitlin Clark, which means they're going to see you play. And they're going to see other great players in the league like Kelsey Plum and Asia Wilson and Aaliyah Boston and all these other players and Sabrina Ionescu and Breonna Stewart and all these other great players that the WNBA has. But if it's bringing in new fans, those fans don't know yet. They only know Caitlin Clark. But by going to your arena to see Caitlin Clark, they're also seeing you for the first time. So if I so 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 if I'm a WNBA coach or player, I'm not bashing Caitlin Clark as soon as she shows up because she has all these fans that the league that I've played in for years and struggled in for years doesn't have. I'm welcoming her and said, "Hey, we can't we thank you for helping us grow the game that we've been fighting for. Thank you for bringing the fans that we've been trying to reach out to forever. Let's rally around you and grow this thing." So I think it's insane to me that there seems to be almost a shunning of Caitlin Clark by the WNBA. And to add on to that, she has officially been left off the Paris Olympic roster. Which, look, the Olympics are to represent your country, to represent the sport in your country the best way that you can. And so it is a clear snub to say, oh, the person that's brought all this attention to our sport in a way that we've never seen, we're gonna leave her at home because we don't like her. It's immature, it's ridiculous, and everybody that seems to be just saying, oh, it's competitive, oh, that's the way the game is played, blah, 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 when you're seeing Caitlin Clark being battered around and blindsided by Kennedy Carter, is just covering up for the fact that they're jealous and they don't like her. So it is what it is, and hopefully, because fans appreciate Caitlin Clark. They appreciate what they're seeing. The other jealous players in the WNBA, they can't get out of their own way. That's all I have for you on this one. I am Roman Gennaro. This has been Empire Sports Talk. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube to see more stuff. Like I said, we just did a 2v2 Prime Duos with KG and Tatum versus Luka and Dirk in honor of the NBA Finals. Check out our socials for more content like that. It's a good day to go 1-0, and we'll see you on the next one.